Good News Ministries of GNM.org. It's the Catholic place for growing your faith. Good News Ministries will provide you with faith-building reflections, virtual retreats, prayer resources, and lots more. All of it is free. Visit GNM.org today. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
We are in the third week of our current message series, all about money. Money. Money is a part of life, that's for sure. We need it. We can't escape it or ignore it. Perhaps that's the reason why we have so many emotions associated with it. Conflicting emotions, even negative emotions like worry, stress, guilt, jealousy. Just to name some of the emotions we experience when it comes to money. Turns out, Jesus understood money and its place in our lives, and he wants us to get it right when it comes to money. That's why he taught about it all the time, more than any other topic. He talked about it because he knows how much stress and tension it causes in our lives and our relationships, how easily worry and concern for it dominates our thoughts and directs our lives, and how love for it can hold our hearts. Jesus understood the real value and the proper place money should have in our lives. And so 2 weeks ago, we learned a guiding principle to getting money right. It's all about renouncing it. And renouncing money doesn't mean to get rid of it, because we could hardly do that, but it does mean putting it in its right place. Maybe that's second place, or third place, or fourth, behind a relationship with Jesus Christ. Last week, we looked at a couple of ways that we can get it wrong when it comes to money and lose our focus on God. Today, as we move on, we're looking at a very important concept that can be countercultural when it comes to money. It can be countercultural, but it's entirely strategic to our own best interest. And to do it, we're going to look at a parable that precedes the reading that Father Nicholas just read from the gospel for us. And this story, this parable, is often misunderstood or misrepresented because people try to make it more complex than it actually really is. Jesus even explains the application at the end of the parable as we just heard and we'll look at again. And yet people still get it wrong. The parable actually follows immediately the parable of the prodigal son that we were talking about last week. Here is another of Jesus' stories. A rich man had a steward who was reported to him for squandering his property. He summoned him and said, "What is this I hear about you? Prepare a full account of your stewardship, because you can no longer be my steward." So he begins the story by introducing us to two characters. One is a wealthy man. This guy has so much wealth that he needs someone to manage his money for him. Now, that's not uncommon in our day, in our culture, but in that day and that culture, it suggests enormous wealth. So this enormously wealthy man discovers that his money manager has been squandering his money. That's the same word that was used in the parable of the prodigal son last week. The younger son wasted away his father's money, squandering his property. To squander is to waste foolishly with no regard for your long-term interest. So the master fires the steward. What happened? Well, the steward said to himself, "What shall I do? Now that my master is taking the position of steward away from me, I'm not strong enough to dig and I'm ashamed to beg. I know what I shall do, so that when I am removed from the stewardship, they may welcome me into their homes." What's he talking about? Well, the steward is losing his job. His time managing the master's money is coming to an end. He's trying to figure out how he's going to provide for himself when he's unemployed. His options are limited. And then he gets an idea of what he'll do. He comes up with a plan to win favor with others and set himself up for success moving forward. Because that's what smart people do. They plan with the future in mind. Wise people manage their current resources in light of future needs. They're shrewd enough to live as if the future is coming, because it is. The steward's smart enough and wise enough to come up with a plan that will set himself up for future success despite current setbacks. Take a look. He called his master's debtors one by one. To the first one, he said, "How much do you owe, my master?" He replied, 100 measures of olive oil. He said, "Here is your promissory note. Write one for 50. Then to another, the steward said, "And you, how much do you owe?" And he replied, 100 cores of wheat. And the steward said to him, "Here is your promissory note. Write one for 80. So the steward goes to the people who owe his master money, and he reduces their debt. So whose money did the steward give away by reducing the debt? It's not a trick question. Whose money did the steward give away? The master's money. He gave away money that wasn't his money for his personal benefit. He gave away the master's money so that the master's debtors would owe him a debt of gratitude. They'd be predisposed to welcome him into their homes. And the parable ends in this unlikely way. The master commended the dishonest steward for acting prudently. The master commends the dishonest steward. Why? Why would he do that? He's dishonest. He took the master's money and used it for his personal benefit. Yes, exactly the point. He took the master's money and used it for his personal benefit. The master doesn't commend the steward for his moral character. That's not the point of the parable. Jesus is using an improbable illustration to catch our attention to make another point. And the point is all about prudence, acting prudently. To act prudently is to act with care and thought for the future. Acting prudently is the opposite of squandering. Now, in a parable, somebody's God and somebody's us. It's not difficult to figure this one out. Obviously, the master is God, so that makes us the stewards. So what's that supposed to mean? Well, first of all, it means the money belongs to God. The money belongs to God, period. That means, at best, we're God's money managers. We have a little bit of time to manage a little bit or a lot of money. That's God's money. There was a time before you have had the money that you have now, and there will be a time when you no longer have it. Did you know when John D. Rockefeller died, his accountant was asked, how much did Mr. Rockefeller leave? And the accountant replied, all of it. You might say, well, my money is my money. I worked hard for it. I earn it. I deserve it. And you might work hard for it. And if you do, you have our respect, and you probably do deserve it. The thing is, it's just not yours. And the unmistakable proof that it's not yours is that one day you won't have it. God has entrusted you with some money for a purpose beyond its obvious current utility. He wants you to use it, at least some of it, in your long-term best interest. Look at his instruction following this story. I tell you, make friends for yourselves with dishonest wealth, so that when it fails, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. He says, use the master's money, which is the money you have right now, to make friends with your wealth, in the same way that steward made friends with his master's wealth. Be generous. Use your money. Use your money beyond your own self-care and the care of your families, which are priorities for sure. Use money for the benefit of others. Give money away. Give money away so that others can be educated. Give money away so that others can be fed or have access to clean water. Give money away so that others can come to know Christ. You know, I'm happy to say, and a bit proud too, that the whole recent history of this parish is an ongoing illustration of exactly this point. All of our mission efforts especially bear this out in striking, remarkable, and deeply generous ways. But it goes beyond that too. There's just a spirit in this parish. I don't mind saying, there's just a spirit in this parish of goodness and of generosity. I could give you countless examples, but here are two. Just this past week, one parishioner, when he heard about our new book, Church Money, approached us and said that he would purchase copies for every family in the parish so that everybody could read the book. And that's what's happening today after Mass. On your way out, grab a book. It's on us. But that's not all. When we announced that last Sunday, another parishioner approached us to buy additional copies for the people joining us online, on our online campus. So if you're online right now and watching, check it out with our chat hosts and get your free copy. It's the act of giving. The act of giving has a long-term value that money doesn't have. Look what he says. I tell you, make friends for yourselves with dishonest wealth so that when it fails, you will be welcomed into eternal dwelling. Eventually, money will be of no use to you. Prudent people invest in their future by giving money away now before it becomes useless to us. I tell you, make friends for yourselves with dishonest wealth so that when it fails, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Money is of temporary value because everything we have is of temporary value. Our life on this earth, as we now experience it, is temporary. The earth itself, in its current form, is temporary. There will be new heavens and new earth that God is forming for our future. And that's our future. That's our true home. Jesus says, when we invest money in people and give to God by giving to his purposes, we're investing in our future home. How does that work? I don't know. He didn't say. But he did say this. The person who is trustworthy in very small matters is also trustworthy in great ones. And the person who is dishonest in very small matters is also dishonest in great ones. If, therefore, you are not trustworthy with dishonest wealth, who will trust you with true wealth? Money's a small matter, really, compared to love and joy, peace and hope, faith and family, friendship and fellowship in our church family, compared to a loving relationship with the living Lord. Money is a mighty small thing. All those other things, they're great big things. They're important things. But here's the point. How we use this small thing in the short term is a big deal long term. It has long-term consequences. If, therefore, you are not trustworthy with what belongs to another, who will give you what is yours? The money belongs to the master. It doesn't belong to us. But there's something else that does. There are true riches and rewards up ahead. What are they? I don't know that either. He doesn't say. But he does say they're accrued, they're built up, they're compounded in the act of giving. And we need to be clear about this because we can't have it both ways. No servant can serve two masters. He will either hate one and love the other or be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. You cannot serve God and money. He says the number one competitor that God faces to our hearts is money. Either we'll be devoted to making money and serving money, or we'll be devoted to God and serving Him. Each demands a commanding position, dominating one's life. Real practical devotion to both is impossible. And to prove his point, Luke adds this little detail. The Pharisees, those false teachers and religious leaders of Jesus' day, the Pharisees who loved money, heard these things and sneered at him. The Pharisees refused to accept this teaching. They hated Jesus. And an often overlooked reason why they hated Jesus was because of his teaching on money. They hated this teaching. Anyway, if I'm going to get money right, I need to be strategic about it. I need a plan. I need to plan my budget and plan my giving in my budget. I need to make my giving a priority. I need to make my giving to God my number one priority in my budget. I need to identify a percentage of the gift that I'm going to give to God. And then I need to discipline myself to progress in that percentage over time. I guess in a certain sense, it comes down to a question of focus. It's a question of focus, really. When focused on following Jesus instead of money, I don't have time for the comparison trap, worrying about what others have that I don't have. When focused on following Jesus instead of money, I don't have to feel guilty about money, because the Lord never wants us to feel guilty. Convicted, yes, but guilty, no, never. When focused on following Jesus instead of money, I'm not defined by my money. I'm defined by my relationship with Christ.
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tour's Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at KaneFord.com.